And you see Rosie is fiddling around here with the audio recorder. The commissioners asked us just this last week if we would mind having the DEEV meetings recorded, and they'll post the audio recording to the county's website. So we'll make an announcement that we'll do that every time, and it will also be on our agenda here so that everyone knows it's being recorded.
So, Helen, why do you suppose the commissioners requested that?
I think to provide more detailed public information, and the public can go in and tune in and listen to it just the same way as they can when they look at recordings of the commissioners' meetings. We do have our minutes, and we'll continue to have those, but I didn't get any more detail than that. Greg,
I'd say it's not DEEV only, it's all the committees, so we're not alone in this.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say primarily public information.
Aren't our meetings recorded anyway? I thought
we were. Well, when we've had support with the minutes, they've recorded them so that it can help with the minutes. So they've never been posted on the county's website. So that would be the difference. And when I got the notification, it didn't just come to DEEV, us. It came to all of the other groups that the county works with as well. So I did send out an email to all of the DEEV members asking if anybody had any concerns about it. And I didn't get any feedback that there were concerns. The only feedback that I got was that we should make sure that it is on the agenda, we should make sure we announce it, in case we have any guests that come to the meeting that do have concerns about it. So, Art, you were going to say something?
No, it makes sense if that's a county policy,
countywide, for the committee meetings.
And
yeah.
I just take great comfort in the fact that nobody will understand what I say anyway. Anyway, let's move on. Review the minutes. Has everyone had a chance to review them?
I have. I move to adopt.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Upcoming events.
These are our board work sessions and hearings, primarily through August and including some in July. In September. I was able to get with each of the leads on these events to give a little bit more background and contact if you have any follow-up questions or concerns. So the public hearing on August the 6th, 10 a.m., Tuesday, 10 a.m. on the stormwater ordinance. Ron helped me with the fact that from the PA's office, Christine Cook is the primary contact there. And then on staff with Environmental Services, be Earl Rao, if you have any other questions or interest in that one. So.
Okay, Greg, Earl will be the contact on the Clean Water Commission work session. I'm in contact with Christine on the ordinance.
All right. I'll stand corrected on that one. The work session that you find there listed on August 7th with the Transportation Improvement Program, that one was actually moved up and has occurred. I verified that with Steve Schulte. That occurred on July the 24th. So if you have any questions or concerns on that one, I think Steve would be more than happy to answer any follow-up questions you may have. Then the one there, Ron, also referenced the Clean Water Commission. That one is Wednesday, August the 7th, 11:15 a.m., a little different time on that one. The chair of the Clean Water Commission, Nancy Olmsted, is a contact on that one. And then for county staff, Environmental Services, the Earl Rao. The work session on Highway 99 project options. That is still a go. That's August 21st, 9 a.m. as you see.
What does that entail?
That is primarily looking at the segment of Highway 99 from the railroad bridge up to about 78th Street. And the improvements there, according to Steve, is primarily aesthetics. They're going to be, they're not looking to add capacity to Highway 99 per se. I think we're still looking at a five-lane facility. But primarily along the edges, the sidewalks, the front edge, roadside vegetation, kind of a beautification and aesthetics primarily.
Who's staff on that?
So that would be the lead on that is Bill Wright.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
So Pete, is that a funded project or is this just a concept at this point? Do you know, Highway 99?
It's not funded.
Not funded, so they're looking at potential concepts of how we could be approved.
And when they talk about beautification, they don't talk about any reconfiguration of lanes or anything like that. It's purely
it's
off the pavement. So,
yeah, it's mostly it's sidewalks. You know, the higher end has got utilities, power underground, and it's addressing the real narrow crossing at the railroad crossing, those sorts of things. But it's not necessarily narrowing the pavement, but it is the higher end option's got much more street furniture and those sorts of things.
Okay.
So is this coming out of the, was it Team 99? There was a group, wasn't there? A community group that you've been working on this. Okay. Any other questions about that one?
So they're not revisiting the Highway 99 overlay standards at all. This is a public works project.
Right. The next one's a double entry. Rosie wanted to make sure we got that one for sure, so we're good there. We're good there.
Quite a bit of interest in Highway
99. Okay, next one down is our kennel ordinance amendments. Spoke to our contact there out of community development is Paul Scarpelli. Do you have any other interest in that one? As it's stated there, Wednesday, September 11th, 10 a.m. The next one down, concurrency discussion, options discussion. That's basically a follow-up from the session on August 21st. To provide additional detail as in to work on alternatives analysis and so forth. So Steve Schulte continues to be the lead on that one, and as you see, it's September 11th.
And that's one that eventually we would have Steve come and talk to us about. That's an area that Steve's been interested in.
Excellent. Okay. We can look at that for sure. The fall biennials, I think, led by Jan Bazala. And that's concerning any code revisions or updates, as you see, held Wednesday, September the 18th.
And we talked about Jan coming and giving us a briefing on what those updates are as well. We had that discussion at the last meeting.
Okay. Now, would you prefer that just before the sessions are held, as in the September meeting or the October meeting, once they've had the sessions, as kind of a report on how those went?
Well, that's up to Dave. I think probably after they've been to the work session makes sense.
Okay. All right. I will contact them to move that forward. Planning Commission work sessions and hearings, as you see there, two of those, Fifth Plain Creek, first of which August the 8th, evening meetings 5:30, and then the second, September the 5th at 6:30.
I wish Jose was here because I wanted to ask him about that one. So I just have to notice for that today. It's like a big one.
So is that something you want to know more about?
I do.
Who's the staff member on that?
It's Jose.
Jose Alvarez?
Yeah, so it's September 18th. So we could ask for a briefing before that work session. So could we have Jose come and let us know what's happening with that at the next evening time?
Okay, in September. All right.
And then if we need to do anything, that gives us some time before September 18th. Okay.
So they're releasing a whole new swath of properties for building it and changing zoning on a lot of properties, some down zones, some up zones. So the county's the proponent, which I find curious.
That's the fifth.
The fifth grade, yeah.
Okay.
The next item on the agenda is correspondence. I don't know if we have anything new to go over there. Anything that any DEEB members have under correspondence? And then finally, DEEB member announcements. Any specific announcements? Okay, so the first item on the agenda here is reconfiguration and public works, and Pete, some of this report on that.
Thank you. What I wanted to do was give you just a little bit of background about the reconfiguration and the reasons why countywide, and then focus a little bit more on public works and what we are doing. As you've probably heard and seen, Clark County has a significant structural deficit. Our 1% property
tax limitation doesn't keep pace with expenses, and that's been in place since 2002. In the early years, since its inception, it really didn't cause us a problem, because from 2002 till about 2006, 2007, growth was pretty extensive, and so it was 1% plus new construction. So the new construction grew sufficiently that our revenues kept pace with our ability to do work. But starting in about 2007, that no longer was the case, and new construction slowed down significantly and almost to a complete stop. At the same time, during the recession period, the commissioners for the general fund, 4 out of 5 years, opted to not even include the 1% increase. The 1 year, they included the 1% in order to support some things in the health department, public health. And in Public Works and the Road Fund, it's been 5 years in a row that the 1% hasn't been applied. So essentially, our revenue has been virtually flat. At the same time, many of our expenses, healthcare, labor costs, material cost, and those things have grown pretty extensively. And a little bit more background with the recession. Back in 08-09, I think for the 9-10 biennial budget, the county went through pretty significant budget cuts in order to balance things. And the budget was reduced by $60 million and resulted in the elimination of 271 positions throughout the county. So pretty extensive. And Public Works was hit by that pretty significantly as well. And it was kind of a painful experience for everyone. Probably it was the right thing to do, but it was real difficult, because I think we were able to weather the recession much better because we had proactively made those reductions and made those cuts. But it's still on the horizon. We're still living with that 1% property tax limitation. And then with the current commissioners, we really don't anticipate over the next 4 years that the 1% would be applied either. So we need to look at how we better control our expenses, both in Public Works, but as a county as a whole. So there were a number of projects that were undertaken. One was developing a county capital plan, and it was to just better define and prioritize what capital expenditures were going to be made by the county across the board, and get that improved. One of the things that helped us considerably in Public Works through that process was that we had recommended, and the county commissioner set a policy that prioritized Public Works expenditures, in that any debt service would be obviously our first priority. After debt service, the operations and maintenance of the facilities that we own would be second. Third would be the preservation, the overlays, the things that extend the life of the infrastructure would be the third item. And then after that, with any monies left, utilize those to leverage any grants or partnerships to do any capital program, provided that we have the ongoing revenue to do the maintenance and preservation of that new infrastructure. One other element was to just build performance improvements and capacity through various processes and process improvements and the lean process. And Chuck's going to talk in a later segment about our lean process. We also implemented a employee suggestion program, so that if you had an idea that could potentially save significant money for the county. You put that suggestion in, and it would be analyzed, and you would be entitled to 10% of the annual savings up to $10,000. So there'd be an incentive for people to be thinking about how things could be done better. It's much modeled after the state of Washington's program. And then there has been several good ideas that have come out of that have been implemented, and so that's something that we're working. We, in understanding how the county operates, there are a number of departments that provide service to the community, but there are a lot of departments that only provide service internally to the county as a whole. Maybe it's human resources, it's general services, it's those sorts of things. And so trying to make sure that we control the cost of those internal services, because they are passed through to all of the other departments, and we have an ongoing internal services committee to keep an eye on that. We had a committee that looked at the urban services that we provide, and I think strategically looking at from the county's just revenue perspective, if you recall back a number of years ago when the city of Vancouver proposed to annex most of Fire District 5, which was a very large annexation, and it caused the commissioners at that time to eliminate the Boundary Review Board and do everything they could to block that annexation. And not knowing whether that was wrong or right, but just from a dollars and cents perspective, cost us more to serve those urban areas than we receive in revenue. So financially, we'd have been better off to have allowed that annexation to go through. Now, that's only from purely a fiscal perspective. There's other perspectives as well, but it's recognizing that those urban services, especially because a very large percentage of the county's urban services are residential. So they have a high demand for service with not very significant revenues. And that particular committee did their work, but recognizing also that we have to have a willing agency or city annex those lands, and given the current circumstances, there's no interest there. So it was an interesting study, but it doesn't necessarily provide us any action. We also looked at those services that could possibly be regionalized, because oftentimes if we share resources and we regionalize services, that it can be more cost effective. And that's not necessarily what drove us to work toward the Discovery Clean Water Alliance, but that's an example of regionalization where we can better serve the community. But in fact, regionalization, if you really start to look at it, and even in the Discovery Clean Water Alliance, the cost and the expense to Clark Regional Wastewater District and the City of Battleground and Clark County is relatively the same. Actually, it may be a slight increase. It's Ridgefield. The small entities are the ones that really get the great benefit by regionalizing and not having to create that service themselves. And then we looked at technology, and we have continually tried to enhance technology over the years to increase productivity. The problem is that in the past, when things were going well, we would bring in technology that may reduce the resources required to do a job, but rather than capture that labor savings because of the technology savings, it was just then invested into other things. But recognizing that if our workforce is going to downsize, we're going to need to be able to look at those lean processes, the process improvements and technology to be able to enhance the level of service that we can provide to the community, so that if we cut our workforce by 10%, maybe the level of service only was reduced by 5%. So technology is a big element of it. But when it comes to how we could really control our expenses and keep expenses down, and it really is about labor. In the general fund, 70% of the general fund expenses are labor. So all those other things are good things to look at, but they're just kind of biting at the edges. They're not really providing the substantial change that's necessary. So we did a considerable amount of workforce planning. And what I included in the handout was, first, I think you've seen this before, our strategic plan. Because when we look at public works, that really is the guiding document on how we prioritize things, how we move forward. And that was a key element to help to guide us in doing our workforce planning. And then we actually, in 2011, had been, as a pilot project under reconfiguration, was the first department to look at a workforce plan. At that point in time, we called it an attrition plan, because our hope was is that we had to reduce the size of our workforce. But we did not want to have to go through those 08, 09 layoffs, and we can do it more strategically, thus the importance of a strategic plan, and reduce the size of our workforce and do it through attrition. And at the time, and it may have adjusted some, but we were looking at about roughly a 2% per year reduction. And on average, we would have people leave for retirement, moving out of the area, taking employment elsewhere, those sorts of things, of about 7%. So we have people leaving, and you overheard just another, not a public work, but another county retirement today. So that creates a vacant position, and you probably read about the finance director and the deputy county administrator leaving, and both of those, as part of that similar attrition plan, neither of those positions are being refilled. They're just restructured and reorganized, again, to try and save some of those labor expenses.
Hi, I just wanted to step in and make sure that I have a listening ear for the room. I wanted to say anything. Our PIO office, Public Information Office, has created these little flyers that we're going to distribute at the fair starting tomorrow. And if you would like, we can provide more than you. If you want to spread the word, we're open for business in Clark County. Free enterprise.
So we did this in 2011, but then some priorities have changed, some additional things have shifted, and so it caused us to revisit this, which is what you have in front of us. A little bit more detail specifically about public works is that when we had when the recession hit actually starting in 2009, the general fund was harmed the most. Growth fund is strictly property taxes and new construction, and so we were pretty stagnant, but we weren't necessarily losing money. The general fund was both stagnant in the property taxes, but then lost a considerable amount of sales tax revenue, because really the new construction was probably the biggest chunk of sales tax revenue, and so that hurt quite a bit. And so we went from $1 million a year being diverted to traffic enforcement to $4.5 million a year at that point in time, and don't foresee that going away. So that was an additional $3.5 million. And then here this year, the clean water fee is, the current clean water fees are not sufficient to cover all of the costs. And so our share of the clean water fee has jumped from $1.9 million to $3.6 million. So another significant jump. So it caused us to revisit what our priorities were and where we're at. And essentially, using all of that as a framework, what we have is our 2013 organizational chart, and with employees both downtown and then out in operations, and then a proposed 2018 plan with reduction in people. And at that point, through that five-year period, at this point we're looking at about a 5.8% full-time equivalent reductions, and about a 7.7% reduction in labor costs. And with the capital priorities, we just recently eliminated one superintendent out of operations and maintenance, and we have one crew chief that over this period we're going to eliminate. Most of them happen to be in the capital delivery, in our engineering, project management, construction management, survey, real properties areas, where the biggest hit to the program is going to be the reduction in the size of our capital program in the future. And one of the things that we've done is that we're planning for that reduction, but we still have a healthy fund balance, so we still have a very large capital program. And so as some of those positions have become vacant through this process, we've actually been hiring a number of two-year project employees so they can fill the role that we need filled in engineering or construction management or those sorts of things. And yet, they're not somebody that we're going to have to lay off because their position by our labor contracts have to end within 2 years. So we still probably have just as many people filling the seats down on the fourth floor as we did before, but many of them are not full-time regular employees. They're different kinds of employees. So that we're going to continue to reduce the size of the organization, and as a result, there are going to be some service reductions that we're going to have to address the plan for.
When you guys have someone who ran a two-year contract who's really talented, can you extend that beyond the 2 years? What is there? They have to become a full-time employee.
We have one person that I can think of that really fits that quite well, and our hope is that there will be a vacant position that we do need to fill that comes available in that work area before his 2 years expire, so that we can retain it. But no, we can get short-term extensions, but essentially 2 years.
Does this plan, Pete, remain the same
if you see a jump in revenue, if activity starts to pick up sufficient to be able to bring in the necessary revenue, does you reevaluate this plan periodically, or is it just on that 1-year or 2-year cycle?
The one area, in fact, we're hoping that development activity increases to where we're looking at increasing, hopefully, 2 positions in development engineering over this time frame because of hopefully more permit activity and more revenue there. So yes, those would be conditioned on that workflow increasing, and it has been increasing. We, in past years, one of the nice things about having them in Public Works is that they didn't have enough development engineering work to keep them busy, but we had other project work through road funds that could keep them busy, so it really worked out well so that they were fully utilized. We haven't had to provide them filler work over the last year because things have increased. So I would suspect if things continue to increase, we're going to have to add some there and plan for that. In the other areas, unless the property tax limitation measures are changed and then we and our commission is willing to increase taxes, it would be limited to new construction, so I wouldn't forecasting it, I wouldn't see it in the other areas. You know, we combine that with grant money being down as well too. We don't get nearly the amount of grant money that we did because those programs for the same reasons have
Can I piggyback off on something that Pete said, though? It's an important issue here, an important point to make. Where we have increase in residential development and building, we're still taking fee revenue for that activity. Where we see business picking up on the commercial industrial office side, if Pete needs more people, if I need more people, I don't go to the fees the fee revenue that we're receiving. I've got to go to the general fund and ask for that revenue to cover the cost of the staff that we would need to review commercial, industrial, office site plans. Mm-hmm. So that's a caveat. Yeah, because we're waiving fees fund. For right.
That's general fund is going to be done by the 1%. You're not going to be able to fund it with that 1%. So that's my question. So you've done this for Public Works. Are you going through the same process for your department?
Yes, not yet.
But you will?
We will be.
So there'll be a reduction in staff?
Well, I can't answer that right now.
No.
But we're going to go through a similar exercise. This is, I'm coming into this late, but this is rolling out for the county for other departments to look at as a tool to look at our costs and our revenues.
So
can I ask a quick question, please? What do you want from us as a result of this?
What we wanted to understand was there's been a lot of discussion over the last few months about the fees and the removal of fees for commercial and industrial, and we talked about the flip side of that coin being as things get busier, will the staff be here to ensure certainty of review timelines and that the process will happen expeditiously? And so what we wanted to understand was what was the plan for staffing in the various departments. So what I'm hearing is a piece that, in terms of development activity that would affect us from your department, is development engineering services. You're talking about increasing staff in that group by 2 between now and 2018, potentially,
provided that we have the additional fee revenue to support it.
Yeah.
And fee revenue, you know, to pile on what Marty said, I mean, at least the direction that the commissioners made is that they need to track it because the general fund, not on the traffic impact fees, but on the other element of the fees, needs to be making up the difference. Mm-hmm. And so they need to monitor how much that is costing, and at some point they are going to have to cut it off because the general fund just can't absorb anymore. But it is, you know, we have to meet our timelines, we have to do the work, and so we have to have the resources to be able to do it.
You're only guaranteed a certain percentage of the general fund, are you not? and nothing over and above what you would have typically seen had fees been coming in.
I'll answer. We're tracking fees in the same fashion.
Right.
So residential fees, we get the money.
Yeah,
commercial fees, we bill general fund and we get paid by general fund. So we get the same amount of money as if someone was paying it. But it's coming out of general fund, so there's something else isn't getting paid for out of general fund.
So the answer to you is there's no action here. It's about understanding, so that when we get questions about why are things taking longer to go through the development review process, we can understand what that has to do with staffing. We had Commissioner Midorian last time saying that, you know, we'll make sure that Marty has the staff that he needs to keep those development review timelines in place. So
I can tell you right now he doesn't.
Well.
So I'm not sure the revenue side is our business
it's
here.
Not. No, okay. It, so but they connect to staff.
The service.
You
have a service side.
Yeah.
And what I am concerned about is you talk about being open for business and we want reasonable fees and whatnot, but if you can't process stuff in a timely manner, you don't do business. And right now, I think we're struggling with that, not because we don't have willing people. We don't have enough willing people. Mm-hmm. It's very frustrating, and I think it's limiting. I think it's counter to what we talk about being open for business. It needs to be addressed.
Are you seeing that on the construction
yeah,
side?
Yeah, new construction.
Yeah. New residential construction. Or does it not matter?
It's
all across the board?
New construction.
Okay.
So what I would like to see is, and this may be simplistic, it may be totally out of left field, but I was just thinking of the airlines. They publish it on time. That's how they measure. That's how I think we should measure.
Yeah.
Not the revenue side, because that's not what I wouldn't say that's really our purview. Mm-hmm. But what's the targets and what's the percentage of deliverables? And I know you track that in the past. I know
you can't do that. Mark, you do that. You have a report that you issue quarterly that talks about how long it takes to process things.
I believe so. And Watt and I were having a conversation in the elevator and coming out of the elevator he's busy,
mm-hmm.
as are a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to bring on, in one discipline, plan review,
mm-hmm.
you just don't hire plan reviewers off the street.
No.
And the county does have a hiring process.
Mm-hmm.
So we interviewed plans examiners. I think there's going to be an offer made to an additional plans examiner next week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of, unfortunately, Odd and others are busy, and we're just classically chasing away.
Yeah.
And some of it is on the residential side. We need to know that we're going to have that sustainable revenue.
Sure.
And I know that we put in another what's called a revenue position. It's similar to a project employee. As long as we have the revenue, we want a revenue position on the building inspection side,
mm-hmm.
as well as the plan review side.
And I think the disconnect is that you say you're chasing the wave, but we're also going through this process. Which means that, you know, you're losing 14 staff, but hopefully two of them, you'll increase in development engineering, but that's by 2018. That's a long time when Otney's plans review this week.
Listen, may I ask a question for Courtney? And I know you know this, but peaks and valleys, and you try and cut them off both ways. Can you outsource some of this stuff to on an ad needed?
Well, yeah, we have a variety of options. We've outsourced in a sense that we've brought in temporary employees through an agency. We can, you know, look at people doing overtime. We can hire project employees for 2 years. We can bring on people full time. And that's there's a mix and match of solutions we've put in place. It's just, unfortunately, some things do take time. And you know, maybe if we'd have known then 2 years ago or 2 months ago, we would have hired up more. We did. We've hired up to our budget authority.
And we, on the engineering side, we have a little more flexibility because
we have on-call contracts with a number of engineering firms, and so it makes it very easy to outsource work if all of a sudden the workload becomes so great and we can't meet timelines. We have pretty quick options on how to address it, which is easier than what the type of work that Marty has. I'll talk to Jim Muir when he's back on Monday.
That's my thing that we're concerned about, why we wanted you to talk about this today, and I think the same thing with Marty when he gets to do this too, is that there's a definite increase in activity. We don't want there to be a decrease in service from the county side. And that's just kind of, we wanted to bring it up early on. We've been talking about this for a year. There's going to be an increase in activity.
Right.
As long as there is a decrease in service, you know, everybody's fine. But we just want to let you know what we're seeing at the same time preparing you. But do you have to get to a certain point and have to have a certain backlog before we can justify bringing somebody else on?
And that's where on-call type contracts or overflow works good, because like Marty said, I don't want to hire an FTE based on the projection that it's going to increase and having that person sitting there with nothing to do. So we utilize the resources we have, and then we use some outside resources to supplement ours. So we have pretty good flexibility, but there's more people in private industry that do what we do than what necessarily does what Mark does.
Right.
Yeah, when I look at this, the first thing that stuck out of me is how slim Greg and Ali's team really is.
Yeah.
You look at there's 9 FTEs in that group, and 3 of them really are reviewers. I mean, that's pretty slim. There's a huge workload for those groups. And what I've seen is that some of the processes that have happened over the last few months has actually probably put more workload on them. And you look at all the people in engineering and construction, and maybe I'm not sure how the process works, but even county projects, those go through development engineering, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
So this whole team is working on design, construction, and they are all, and this development engineering team is not just supporting private, it's also supporting the public stuff. And the things that come up during construction season, change orders, I don't know if you guys deal with the same thing, but if we have a change order on the private side now, we need to go back to engineering review. Sometimes it's 2-3 reviews. And those are the things, I think there's some process improvements, trying to figure out how to do those more efficiently so they don't need to spend that much time on it. Because I'm guessing right now that the engineering team is kind of bogged down so much on changes and reaction in the field of things that happen that they're probably not even getting the new reviews.
Some of that, to the extent that's possible, you'll see within the engineering and construction. We have a very large construction management group, and on top of that, we probably have more temporaries and project employees in addition. And so they are doing most of the field work. You know, if it requires a change, yeah, it's got to go back to engineering. And like I was saying, it's only been recently that we didn't have to find, even though all these groups are fairly small, we didn't have to find filler work for them. They're just now have their plates full. So we have a job to try and manage that.
Question, please. Good job on this. Very, very good job. On the last page, you list your mission statement out there, guiding principle, under commitment. I just want, in your mind, under commitment, being problem solvers rather than rule enforcers. What's an example of that? Does anything come to your mind in particular?
Yeah, it's really easy for someone to walk in and try and interpret the code. But sometimes you need to also be able to interpret what the intent of the code was. And you have examples in the field that don't necessarily, if you're trying to solve one problem and this particular example isn't causing that problem with the code, then, you know, applying some flexibility as long as you're
you're meeting the intent. You know, so it's trying to create that environment that, and I think Greg's doing a really good job, Greg and Ollie and the folks, is that, you know, when somebody's got a problem with, you know, or a challenge on a project, go and help them solve it. Not just say that this is the way it has to be because that's what the code says.
I get it. Where did you get it right there?
Any other questions, comments? We really appreciate it, Pete. I think you heard from us that the concern is always going to be on that development engineering side and making sure that
we've got the resources.
Back to the good old days. It's been an issue for a long time. Okay, so next on the agenda is the lean process. Chuck?
He's going to use that, yeah.
Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to be here to kind of talk about the lean process that we've gone through, where we're at today, and what we're looking forward to in the future with Lean Permit Center. Initially, when we did the lean process, it was for single-family residential in subdivisions. So what we've been working through are those homes that are in subdivisions that are fully developed. I want to give you guys a little bit of history first, what brought us to where we are today and the successes that we've found so far. First, lean for us has been an operational strategy. The idea behind lean is to help us eliminate the waste in the review process that we had in the past. Secondly, it helps us reduce our costs in the end, potentially the cost to you as our public and our contractors, our customers. The third thing is it increases the customer satisfaction because our review times are shrunk down drastically compared to what you've been used to. The idea is that you know up front anything you need, and clean submittals are being made from the very beginning, which makes that review process much easier and takes away a lot of the review of one person reviews and says, oh, you're missing this, they call you, it's on hold for you to bring that in, and then next person reviews it, same thing happens. And it really helps us to minimize that for you. Ultimately, it allows us to improve our performance metrics as well. It gives us a little bit better measure because we're really able to identify, are we meeting those goals that we set in mind at the beginning? We wanted, when we started this process, the idea was, initially, it was when you brought in a plan, if everything was perfect, nothing was ever put on hold, you were a 23-day process from the time you submitted to the time we were calling you to let you know your permit was ready to pick up. The goal of lean was to reduce that from the 23 days to 11 days. So from the time you submit to the time you were called to come in and pick up your permit would be 11 days.
Is that calendar?
Generally, working days.
Okay.
So, because we're not working days. So, ultimately, it helps us become more competitive by enhancing the efficiency, productivity, and quality. When we talk about the idea of competitive, obviously we don't have a lot of competition, but for me personally, what I believe to be the measure of being competitive and being enhanced for you guys is you want to come and do things for the county or with the county. You want, when you're thinking about what your project's going to be and you say you're having to work with the county, it's a positive experience for you. It's not a dreadful, oh my God, really, I have to go deal with that again today. So the idea is, that's how I want to measure that competitive edge for us, is the success that you see, and that you have a desire to want to come to the county, because it is a positive experience for you as our customer. Some of our goals that we had in Lean was to reduce the permitting time, as I had talked about just previously, from 23 days to 11 days, again from submittal to issuance. Reducing the number of times that an application is put on hold by completing the review up front. No longer accepting applications that are not complete. And essentially what's happened for us is, and what I learned when we met with the Building Industry Association, is there's been a long time belief, and especially back in the day when everything was really busy, let me just get my plans in so I'm in line. Doesn't matter if it's junk, I'll fix it along the way. Our idea is to shift that mode and shift that thought process. We want quality up front. The better the quality up front, the faster you're going to have those permits. So the idea is to shift that so that you don't have that feeling that you have to be in line and then give us everything along the way. Definitely coming around to educating the building industry during our dry runs that we were doing. A lot of eye-opening things on both sides, and we had a very positive response from the builders and the contractors that helped us to determine how successful we can make this and were there going to be hiccups in the road in making this a successful plan. And then finally, show the community that we share in the belief with the construction industry that time is money, and we're doing our part to help in your success as well. That is what we're here for, is to help you guys be successful. So, ultimately, some of the things we made initially and changes were in the staffing. We definitely had to make sure we had staff investment. Back in January, we did a full one-week lean process. Most of you probably heard this. It was actually the very first week I started with the county, so I never really worked under the old process. So this was all new to me. But it was really getting their investment, letting them realize that, you know, change is good. There's not a reason to, I don't want to say fight the change, but there's a reason we're doing this, and it's to make everything better for everyone. Ultimately, cross-training staff was really important. In the past, we've had a couple of people that understood stormwater in these subdivisions, making sure that all of our staff were experts in the stormwater in subdivisions so that any single person could help do this review for our customers. Finally, also with plot plans, obviously measuring setbacks, ensuring setbacks where they need to be, things like that, making sure everybody on our staff understood what that process needed to be and what we were looking for, establishing the consistency so that everybody knew the expectations when they went to talk to the builders or the contractors, so we didn't have one staff person going out and say, well, we need this, this, and this, but then another one come out and say, well, no, you don't need that, we need this, this, and this. So that there was always consistency no matter what you bring in, no matter who's doing that review, you have consistency. We did have a few staff changes in the permit center. We added a project employee. I know that PETA talked about project employees, and we added one to our staff to help in this process. And we have had a great, this year has been amazing for the amount of applications we've had. And staying on top of it has been a struggle. And so bringing this extra person on, she used to be a permit tech with the county years ago. She actually fell back into the role very quickly and very easily. So about a month of shadowing and training, and she's out on her own now. So she's doing really well. And then just shifting some of the job duties among staff. Again, it goes back to everybody understanding stormwater, understanding plot plan review, those things. Again, so that no matter who you get or who you're talking to, everybody can do it. Everyone's consistent to the needs that you have. When we did our dry run model testing, it allowed us to identify some of our challenges and opportunities that we could face in the process. We had invited builders in, and as the word got out with our meeting with BIA and things like that, they started calling and making appointments. I don't think we had ever had that many appointments at any time. But we were to the point that we had appointments almost every day, all day, with the builders to help us through this process. What was great about the builders is the idea of Lean is it's very front-loaded. You're going to spend a little more time with us at the very beginning in the permit center to get that out faster. They were willing to take that extra time sitting in our permit center. Sometimes they were there potentially 45 minutes while we were doing this review, but they were still okay with the fact that we were still in an old process, so we weren't necessarily able to get that out in the 11 days that we would have in Lean, because we weren't in Lean yet. We were just dry run testing it. So we had some great insight from builders in the community during this process, and great patience with us, and they knew that they were definitely helping us to be successful. The other thing that it allowed us to do is we were able to identify some common issues and missing information. Believe it or not, the stormwater is definitely the biggest struggle for builders. And, you know, I think it's across the board. It's not any specific company. It's just everyone across the board struggles a little bit with that. Sorry. So, but I mean, we've definitely been able to do some great education with them. And the idea when we were doing this is we were back out and helping the builders understand this is what we need. Really understanding when they're looking at their subdivisions and it's giving them the different lots of what they can do, making sure they're really looking at that, following that, and coming in if we need to help them. We're more than happy to help them and let them know that we can do that for them. To give them that support. Along with the dry run, what we did was we also developed a survey. We wanted to start really surveying our customers. What are their experiences? Our survey allows the customer to identify the person who helped them. And so when we look at those results each week, I'm able to do an analysis of, okay, do we have a struggle with an employee? Not really with an employee, but is there a process that's common, that there's a potential struggle with the customers when they're with that employee, and we can talk about what are those options, what's happening there, what do they think we could maybe do differently, is that how they're wording things. It goes back to really how do we improve that customer service function in the permit center. We developed the lien processing form. It's actually the form we use that we give to the customer when they submit their plans. If there's anything that they need to fix or correct, everything is written on there. The staff person that did that lien review goes out and talks to the builder at that time and tells them these are the things we still need. If they don't need anything, it's passed on to another permit tech and they take it in. It's ready to process. And then finally, applicant handouts are continually being updated. What that means is we are continually trying to improve the handouts for customers and what you see online for applications to make sure that they're easy to read, they're easy to understand, easy to follow, that the information you need is clear and concise for you. When we did the live dry runs, I've already said we invited builders in the community to come help us with the process. Really gave us a lot of feedback. Our staff was able to identify those issues that potentially could be stumbling blocks for us, so we were able to identify those before we went live. And then we conducted those dry runs from March through June. So we really did a lot of testing on this to make sure that we were prepared to go live when we went live. July 1st of this year is when we went live with this. We have been doing it now for a month. So some things that we have realized in our success of this, and I put them as milestones because July 1st we went live with our process, kind of changing the way we think in Clark County, especially in the single family residential right now, looking at those next options. In July and August, we wanted to get through the remaining files that were under the old process. Again, we were at one point on July 1st, we were 6 weeks out on single-family residential reviews. So, and now we've started this lien process that how do we incorporate the process that we say would be a lot of days when we have another process where we're out 6 weeks. With the amazing help of our building staff and plan review, again, the patience of the building community, because we shared with them the trouble we were going to experience and told them, we want to do this, we can't promise 11 days this month, but by August 1st we're going to be able to do that for you. So we get to July 29th. As of July 29th, we're 16 days out on every review that we have right now. So, and, yeah, in a month. So I have to give the kudos to our building department, the plans examiners. One of their plans examiners, I think, has been averaging 12-hour days to help us get through this. So she has really been amazing. So what we're looking at now is we're live, things are going pretty smooth. We're looking at September and October, we want to start looking at what the next processes would be. We've kind of been given the direction that we'd like to look at commercial as our next lean gig. So we want to start identifying who would be on that team to help develop that process. And then in November and December, start conducting the mini lean event to help with commercial development. We obviously are not going to look at doing the full week long because we've experienced that. So we have actually a good understanding of what we need to do to make it successful without having to go a full week pulling a whole bunch of staff off to review the commercial process. So we are very, very fortunate that we got to experience this, enough people experienced it, we understand it, that I think the commercial process will be able to move a little bit smoother and identify those.
What's the potential workload on commercial to residential?
Ooh, I don't know.
Is it significantly different, or?
I think.
I don't need exact numbers.
And we're talking just building permits.
Right, yeah. The ones that would apply the lien to, because the lien process is probably not going to be applied yet to, say, the site plan application. It would be applied the way I would see it first, to like tenant improvements or shell improvements from,
When Marty and I have talked about that, that's what we definitely have talked about. What are those things? Is it, we look at those where it's a tenant improvement or the site plan's already been done and they have a pad and they're ready to put the building on it.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Hit those first and identify how do we make that process easier, faster, efficient. And then how do we move into when you have the full site plan? You're starting with bare dirt. How do we make that process a more efficient process?
That's a nice question.
Yes, absolutely.
About what percentage of your budget is general fund based and what is the direct fee? I walk
buildings, in. The building is 100% fee funded.
So I'm a one-off guy that I want to build my own house and do my own submittal. Member of the public, so to speak. Am I able today, in today's environment, to process, to get through this process? Or is it all professional based type support?
So you're building your own home, or you have a contractor?
I want to do my own submittal. And I'm a layman. Mm-hmm. Can I get, is it your perspective, Marty, that a layman can get through this, or is this whole process consultant driven?
I don't think this process is 100% consultant driven. If you were, as you're saying, a layman coming in, most of the time they would come in first to find out, what do I need to do? And when they sit down with a permit tech, I would say a permit tech on average, because we have this happen quite often, they probably spend a good hour, hour and a half talking to the customer about our checklist, everything that's required of them and what they can expect. So even for this process, they could, a layman could come
in. So my response, an initial response, I'm a layman, I built a home in 1995. Did I go to the permit center and get permits? No, my builder did, my contractor did. They're not a consultant, but this fellow was my builder, my contractor. He submitted an application for the permit and he was issued the permits.
I'm a builder in name only, but I used to be able to get through this process. I'm not sure I could anymore without referencing a consultant anymore. It's complicated. And I'm not saying it's wrong. At some point, there needs to be some public support for this process.
But do you think there's a high incidence or even a relatively low incidence of that ever taking place, like what Marty was saying? I wouldn't think that Ma would do their submittals, their building permit submittals.
And it's probably just because these are the headlines, right? Some guy wants to go in and build a carport shed or something, oh. Fees $1,200 and...
Which has changed, by the way, July 1st.
The mom has to come in, you're right. They're usually doing the carport or they're doing the outbuilding, things like that. They're not actually building their own home. I like to think, in my experience being here so far, I don't think they struggle as hard as they might have in the past. Because even when they're coming in to find out what they need to do, the staff is all very clear. They point out on the checklist. They'll even, when I shadow my staff and really observe them, they'll talk to people and even say, now this may be a struggle for you. You might need to get help with this, but here's some additional information that may help you. So if they first come in initially, especially on residential, they definitely try to go out of their way for those people who don't do this for a living and they're a one-off, I'm going to build a shop on my property. They even go over with them, can you even do this? Before they ever even start in, this is what you need to do. They talk to them about their property, what we can see based on aerials and things like that.
And the headline of the $2,000 job costing $1,200 in permits, that's changed. We went to the board in mid-June with a modification to our fee table on residential remodel projects under a certain size. It's a flat fee. With Ron's assistance and Chris Cook's assistance, we put together a guidance on when you're covering a patio or a deck under a certain square footage, we're not going to charge you $270 for stormwater inspection because it's not warranted, it's not triggering. So we've made some changes effective July 1st for the smaller contractors, remodelers out there doing work. And there were a couple of people who got caught in the transition. I had to deal with a fellow who applied prior to July 1 effective date. In one permit application, we refunded the $270. In the other permit application, he had to make full payment, and we refunded, and then he's just reapplying under the cheaper fee. So, you know, the headlines are almost always, in my experience, the exception. It's not even the 80%. It's the 8%. It's the 2%.
Yeah.
The 98% are getting through.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions for Chuck?
I
think you said in your presentation there was a bullet point that said that the building community doesn't know about this completely and they need to do some more education.
There's still some education pieces out there because we have those builders who were part of the BIA meetings that we were at. Also, as they were coming in under the old process, we were telling them about this. And we still had a few come in there like, oh, what? And so we explained the benefit of they're going to have a 20-minute wait for each application up front. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, they're going to have a permit in 11 days.
So there are some people here on this board that can help get that message.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Would you be able to send that PowerPoint to me directly and I can that distribute it?
Actually, if Rosie doesn't mind, we'll send it out to everybody on the board.
Yes.
That way you all have it.
I
would even put it on the last slide, Rosie, add my name and number. People can call me. I would welcome that.
Thank you.
One quick question before you go. You said stormwater is one of the trickiest parts. I know that you guys have made some changes on the way you're handling those stormwater plans when now they're going upstairs to engineering. I have to say, what's happening now on those is taking a lot longer and a lot more is being required on some of those plans. We're requiring basically a full, I got some comments just recently. They wanted almost a full plan set for a residential roof and driveway, basically.
It was on acreage though, right?
It was on acreage.
And we haven't addressed that process yet. We're kind of doing a little bit of internal modeling of that right now to see how it could line up with the residential in subdivisions. That one is still, that stormwater is still a little bit tricky, even for our staff.
Yeah.
So those in subdivisions are pretty clear, pretty straight up front. It's just making sure developers and builders understand which one they should pick for the property they're doing based on the need. That one is unique that you have.
Last 2 months, they've changed the way they process those. Where it used to be, you do a report, you say what you're doing to address it. A lot of times you trigger 1 through 9 or 1 through 10, but you have a lot of ineffective impervious where you don't have to go through it. So basically, you go through a small report, show that it still needs some technical expertise, but it didn't have to go through where you do detail sheets, cover sheets. We're putting together probably 2 to 3 times it's the same effort for really the same outcome at the end. And I think it's also taking a lot of staff time because now it's going through multiple reviews at the agencies, or with the reviewers taking their staff time, which, and at the end of the day, we're basically doing the same thing.
If you don't mind, email me that project and let me just see if there's something unique to it or identify some of the issues that maybe, even if there's issues, maybe we can shore up and make that a little more efficient. So I'm more than happy to talk to the other departments. Can't guarantee anything, but always looking for those ways we can make it better for you. Make it leaner.
Yep.
Thank you
so much. Okay, so the last item on the agenda here is the surface mining standard tonight.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do this from here, so I'm going to toggle back over some maps, so if you don't mind, I'll just talk from here. So I've been working on the surface mining overlay update. Couple of reasons for that. The surface mining overlay really hasn't been touched since about 1997 when it was first approved. And in the interim, we lobbied the legislature to fund a aggregate resource study for the Clark County. We heard via DNR that they wanted to fund a couple of different county studies, and we said, yeah, we'll take that. And so the Division of Geology and Earth Resources completed a inventory map for Clark County. And that was done in 2005. So now we can't say, we don't know where the resources are. You just tell us where you want us to put the overlay, because that's the way most counties are doing it. They don't want to take responsibility for actually identifying the aggregate resources that are in their county, which the statute kind of requires them to do. But, you know, unless you have the expertise, it's easier to say, I don't know where it is. You tell me. So, as a result, the board authorized that we go forward with this update, and they appointed a task force that consisted of several of the industry representatives, plus Vic Erland, who's a natural resource conservation consultant, works with mining projects all over the country and all over the world, probably, and then a couple of neighbors from the Livingston Quarry. So it's a little bit heavily on the industry side, but we're operating by consensus, so nothing goes forward unless everybody agrees. We've had quite a few meetings in the last year or so. I think we're on meeting 15 about now, but it's gone pretty well. We started with the resource map that was provided to us by DNR. Essentially, this is a version that's translated into our GIS. It's pretty hard to read, but the yellow is sand gravel. The lighter yellow is where it's been identified. The lighter yellow is sand and gravel where it's speculative in terms of whether it's got any commercial significance. We know there's sand and gravel there, but it may not be in proportions that are mineable and worth going after. The brown and tan are essentially the same thing for bedrock, so the darker color are the known deposits that have been identified. This light brown here is called hypothetical bedrock. So we know it's there, but we don't know how deep it is or whether it's got commercial significance or would pass a strength and durability test. And then this lighter color is there's been just a little bit of spotty information about the resource being there. And again, it's bedrock. So the darker blobs here are the areas that are currently having surface mining all the way applied to this. So the task force took a look at the work that was done by DNR and said, sure, that makes sense to us. The classification scheme is logical. And then they went to work in terms of how do we take this giant blob map here that covers about half the county and winnow it down to something that's a little bit more practical and really addresses where the resources are. Their approach to that was maybe rather than go through all these maps, let's just walk you through what we did. Said, let's eliminate the speculative stuff. Okay, we don't have to put it on this, we don't have to put the overlay on these areas. There's not enough known there to say that it's a long term commercial significance. So we'll take that off the map. And then they also agreed that we should eliminate any new areas that are within the urban growth areas because those are already identified for a conflicting purpose. If somebody really wants to mine there, a piece of ground that's inside the UGA, we're going to make it simple for you to apply to the overlay, but we're not going to apply it in advance and then have to take it off in order to build the subdivision method. The next step we took was to eliminate the hot ball hypothetical. After looking at it, there was a broad band that was of hypothetical bedrock that was right along the kind of took this version out to the public and we got crucified because this area along the East Forest of the Forest River particularly was identified as being the potentially mineable. And
it's great rock there.
It's good rock there.
Yeah.
Who wants to dive in? I almost will.
Yeah,
most of all of them.
Good rock.
So, after eliminating the hypothetical, and then we went through and looked at individual areas. And that was because we were contacted by a property owner that said, you know, you've got this on your map. We only have 5 acres. You can't get to the park. You have to cross a creek to get to the park where the rock is. And it's just not practical, and you're adversely impacting my property value by doing this. So we took that example and said, okay, what are the criteria? We've already established the criteria for adding and removing. So how do these criteria apply to the remaining polygons on the map? And in doing that, it took a little time, but it was fairly easy to see which one should remain and which one should be eliminated. And then we contacted the owner of the property that currently has the overlay to make sure that they want to keep it. The resulting map looks something like this. So this is the proposal that's going to go forward to the board, to the planning commission in September. And there are some things that are really hard to read here because it's such a small scale, but so we have some of the existing cross-hatching where the existing surface mining overlay is, it will be removed, and those are shown in yellow. There are quite a few of them. So there's a lot of areas where there's not any indication that there was ever any resource there, and they don't meet the current criteria, and or they've been mined out already. Or in the case of Camp Bonneville, it ain't going to happen. You've got explosives all over in there. Even if you get the explosives off in the contract, they turn this property over to us, or the Army, very clear, never mind this area. So we've looked at each area individually and came up with recommendations for adding or deleting the surface mining overlay. Questions on that process?
Was there thought given to the purpose is to ensure appropriate use of gravel mineral resources to protect and ensure, protect existing? So in some ways we're shrinking the ability of the county to maximize that resource.
Well, are you saying, did we end up with a net increase or decrease in acreage? Is that
maybe not acreage, but was there any assessment done on quantity or quality of the resource that you're, whether it's mineral or gravel?
Well, yeah, the quantity and quality assessment was done at the front end by the Department of Geology. They're the ones who came up with the classification scheme. So they didn't map it as identified unless it was at least 25 foot thick and at least 1,500 feet across and 168. So all those polygons that they showed as being identified resources we have carried over here have some assessment in terms of quantity and then also the quality. Somebody's gone out there, taken rock out, and done strength and durability tests, and found that they meet washed out standards. Mm-hmm.
So did we lose net volume or gain net volume, or is that even of the county in the county's purview to
I haven't really done a plus or minus acreage. I mean, I suppose we will end up losing because a lot of our best lands were brought into the Vancouver growth boundary. So we used to have 2 square miles right in here. We don't have those anymore.
I'm just going by the goal. Protect and ensure appropriate use of gravel and mineral resources in the county.
Right. It doesn't say that you have to have a guaranteed 20-year or 50-year supply that comes out of your county. You may not have mineral resources in your county that are adequate to supply your needs. I mean, right now the market is sand and gravel comes from Boardman or from across the river or from St. Helens. It's typically not produced in the county anymore because a lot of the best sand and gravel has been covered over by the city of Vancouver.
My God.
So individual areas, you know, individual operators have maybe a 20 or 30 year supply, but we haven't done the whole quantitative assessment.
Just another element I'm kind of skipping ahead here. This is intended for either newly designated surface mining areas or for initiating surface mining for the first time, but not retroactively to existing mining operations. Is that correct?
No. Whatever standards that are applied will apply retroactively
to existing,
about standards yet,
to existing mining operations. These would apply retroactively to existing mining operations?
They can, yes. In fact, I think the operators would want them to see what we're coming up with.
Some of the standards are fairly significant.
All I've talked about is the map so far.
Yeah,
so
okay.
We'll get to the standards
and
the code part now if you're ready to go there. So one of the things we found was there was really no logical procedure for adding or removing surface mining overlay. In fact, it's been very confusing over the last 15 years whether that overlay was a changing, would be a comp plan amendment or a zoning map, because it was on both maps. And part of the reason for that is historic, in that when the comp plan was first adopted, there was a whole lot of mystery about what in the world we were going to do with Section 30 and Section 31 in that particular area. There was no underlying zoning. It was given this sort of bizarre designation of mining with an X on it. So someday it'll be something else, but we're not sure what. Anyway, very, very convoluted process in the past. So what we recommended doing is making it very clear that, and procedurally, this would be a Type 3 amendment to the zoning map, which would take all indications off the comp plan map, and make it very simple to designate and de-designate. Basically, if you have some property that's 5 acres or larger and you want to add the overlay, I'm sure that you've got some, you know, 4-inch depth pits that can bring the presence of an ag to. On the other hand, if you want to remove it, show that the aggregate resource has been depleted or that it's not economically feasible to mine there for any number of reasons, environmental or practical reasons, distance to market, or, you know, show that the area has been brought into the growth boundary or has been designated for working. Mining has been precluded by incompatible uses, either on the property or zone. So that's the procedural part. I think in your handout you'll see that policy language, we had 20 different policies at one time. We looked at that, and a lot of things that are listed in here were not policies, they were kind of criteria for doing this and that. Sometimes they were activities that were, well, things that sounded good, that, you know, the county really doesn't have any responsibility for. So, in looking at that, we shortened it down to less than 10.
Can I ask you a question on that, Mike?
Yeah, sure.
3.5.10. It seems like you're regulating a
adjacent, where you are regulating, imposing some criteria on adjacent properties. Not that there shouldn't be, but they should be subject to their own reviews when they want to develop, rather than subject to some kind of limitation when the neighbor wants to develop.
This is kind of a broad policy that may not take the place of what it's intended to do is help us get to that purpose language instead of good land use and developments which are incompatible with the mineral extraction statute without taking away the property right of the owners of property that have a surface right overlay. So in the current policy language, if you look at 3.5.7, it says land shall not be used for any activity other than surface mining or use compatible with mining, so sand, gravel, or mineral resources to be treated. Or reasons for not mining are clearly demonstrated on the site of the claim. Well, that's what the policy says, but our standards never really reached that. We have subdivisions on top of land that has surface mining overlay on it.
I guess my point is that 3.5.10 targets adjacent landowners.
Right.
This doesn't seem to be the appropriate place to target land uses for adjacent landowners. That's my point, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Where would you put it?
I'd put it in their own whatever their zoning code is for that particular.
This is a broad policy statement.
Whatever their broad.
Somehow we should get to code that says that you can't do this. And what we do in practice is put on your plat that you're within 300 feet or 500 feet of an area with surface mining overlay, so you should be aware that things will happen there that you may not like.
But that's not what you're saying here. You're targeting the adjacent landowner for additional limited use. Seems to be reversed. It should be that if you're targeted, this is relative to the gravel and mineral resource parcel. It should be they should minimize the uses that would impact the neighbor rather than the other way around.
So, an example of this might be if somebody were doing a cluster subdivision in the rural area,
right.
And during the review, say some of the best locations for the houses were closer to a piece of property with a mining overlay on it. During the review, would then be suggested by staff that they might want to relocate the lots further away from there because of the mining overlay. Now, we've had to put things on plats and site plans and things that says you're located right next to a freeway and there's no responsibility for WDOT to build a wall for you. You know, so you're going to have noise associated with it. Is that kind of what you're talking about here? I mean, is that what this policy is talking to you about?
I think the thing to remember that it's a policy. It hasn't been implemented by any standards in anybody, any district so far. And I'm not sure how it will be because of the certification process, which is what we have. So you're right. Maybe this one should be squared away. It seems to call it nothing. If we don't intend to do something about it, it might be a.
But I agree with that. I mean, you have something in this particular comp plan policy affecting adjacent lands, regardless of what their comp plan is.
Yeah, well, I think the point, policy comes into play when you come in to do a comp plan amendment and you want to rezone something adjacent to a Section 30 type operation and you want to put a make it available for a wafer tent. Well, those are not compatible uses. any vibrations and destroy the opportunity for this guy to do what he needs to do.
Well, the other example I would think of would be agricultural uses. Looking, you know, you have different setback standards for doing a rural house next to A, and that's actually required by the state law for nuisance for smells.
Right.
This would be.
And I don't disagree with the intent. I just think it should be worded where the applicant that is coming in for a land use proposal is the one that needs to comply. Not that the neighbor at some point in the future may have to comply with existing or even potential uses. I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah, it's interesting how different counties approach that, because some counties put all the burden on the adjoining property owners and make it very stringent for them to stay away from mining operation or potential mining operation. Here it seems like we're trying to say each side has to be cognizant of the fact that something could be happening here that it isn't going to be compatible with the one side.
Thank you.
I won't forget that. Any other discussion on policy? Plan, which preempts us from really being involved in those. the noise level, well, let's get down to D, I guess, the proposal. So we're going to end up with some language about fencing and gating. This is probably not the final language here. I'm trying to find out if mining, NSHA, the mining safety contract, covers that. I haven't found the specifics of it. I would rather just refer to some industry standard that's working. Yes. I don't know that we have the expertise on protecting the public from mines and vice versa. Noise levels, we're referring to the state statute to begin with. But there are some other considerations built into the hours of operation that really are noisy. So one of the things we heard from the industry is, look, people are going to nighttime operations in paving, nighttime operations in rock delivery. All construction is happening at night on the roadways. We can't bid on these projects if we limit our hours of operation to, you know, from 7 to 6 p.m. So I don't know whether this is going to fly or not, but we're trying it out and see what the public says about it. We got very specific about no holidays, no Sundays, and that batch plant operations are limited to the normal hours of workday hours and then 8 to 5 on Saturday. Drilling and blasting are restricted, also 9 to 4. But loading and delivering rock, I thought, could be done without too much noise, provided that you invested in backup alarms that don't go beep and were designed to be heard 2 miles away. You know, there's other technologies available, including strobe lights and the white noise ones. So go buy them. If you want to work at night, if you want to bid on these projects, equip your loaders with these things. And then that seemed like a reasonable trade-off to me. We're still going to hear complaints about trucks on the roads at 2 in the morning, rumbling down, waking me up. And our board sounds like they're okay with that. You know, the cameras must go on. So we'll see how that plays out. We decided not to get into the stormwater and erosion control business. We just deferred to the standards that are there. It's pretty clear that they apply throughout the site. And same with blasting, mining, blasting activities. I think we could get into a whole lot of convoluted language about protecting groundwater and wells and off-site structures, but that really puts the county in the middle of what are basically civil complaints. What we need to do is make sure that it's very clear from day one when an applicant comes in to start one of these mining operations that there's nobody in the world that's going to protect your property from damages from whatever they do except you. You're going to have to do a thorough background. Do all the background work that's going to be necessary. Maybe you need to get a lawyer. I don't know. But don't come to the county if things go sour. We're not going to do before and after testing.
Can you repeat that?
Yeah. And I'll just start our business partner. So I may be getting too explicit here, but it's pretty clear in practice we're not getting involved in groundwater well effects. We can set standards for the hydrogeology studies that have to be submitted, but and the hearings examiner can go into design monitoring programs to get into detail. But putting all that stuff into a set of standards didn't seem to make sense. I think that's certainly a debatable point, but it's what we end up with.
So, Mike, you're interchanging, I think, maybe. Everything's permitted use.
Yeah.
So, what are the conditional uses?
Well, here's the trick.
Because I see language in here in reference to a hearing and a hearings examiner.
Yeah.
but you have permitted use, so is it a permitted use, but you still have to go through a hearing?
You still have to go through a hearing.
Oh, okay.
Here's how we dealt with it. So your subdivision goes through a 2A, right? Somebody yeah. wants a hearing, mm-hmm. there's a hearing. Right. Treating it the same way. You have a neighborhood meeting, it's a 2A, somebody, and inevitably somebody will want to go to a hearing, so then they'll have a hearing. Right. So it'll be a permitted use, but there will still be conditions of approval that apply. The okay. SEPA conditions still apply. And here's the other interesting part of it. This is what made it work. Is that we put a provision in here that a year after you come back to the hearing again, and the neighborhood gets another bite at the apple. Mm-hmm. They can't start from scratch, but they can say, right. hey, this isn't working because of this, or this guy isn't needing conditions of approval. Okay. And that's one of the things that's been missing.
So where do you first put that?
That's in the
E4. Section E4. And then I'm sorry, I don't know if you were done talking here, but I noticed that you pulled everything out of here on reclamation.
Yeah. Not our business.
Not your issue? Okay. Is it a state requirement?
Yes.
So, yeah. Mike, just, I'm sorry.
Okay.
On the hearing here that's required 12 months after, does the county have experience with that kind of requirement? And then what happens yeah. if the applicant doesn't go through the process and actually perform the hearing?
Yeah, de facto, the hearing examiners have been required to follow Perry Tulu Mountain and Yakult Mountain, I think.
Yeah.
It's become pretty much a regular course of action. So all we're doing is formalizing it here and saying, look, you get another shot at this if you didn't get it right.
So what's compliance like with that?
Well, compliance is whatever the hearing gets. The hearing happens, whether the conditions of approval are actually met.
The county conducts the hearing.
I'm sorry?
The county conducts the hearing.
The hearing examiner, yeah.
The applicant has to have the hearing. That will be a condition of approval to come back 12 months later, and you have to apply to have a hearing on the merits of,
sure.
of your approval.
What happens if I don't?
Then you're in non-compliance with your approval.
So I'm still mining gravel.
That's true of anything. If the county decides not to enforce conditions of approval, you're still mining gravel, we're still hearing complaints.
Okay. So at some point, they'll just stop work.
Mm-hmm. And so you go back and then address the condition of
approval. The expectation that existing mines are going to go back through this process, that people that have existing mines now are going to go back through this, or is this for new mines?
I'm not 100% clear how. I imagine it's going to be more of a hybrid approach.
So, but if you have an existing mine,
the standard part will apply. I think the board would like the standard to apply everywhere. I don't know if they can do it legally because you have these conditions of approval. So it may be that operators will want to come back and say, I want another bite at this. I want different set of conditions of approval, and let's go through the hearing, and I think I've got supportive conditions or something that's easier that allows me to operate outside. Or we may just say that the hours of operation and some of the other standards things apply to everybody. It wouldn't surprise me if that's how that was.
Yeah, everything was
negotiated. So my
next
step, this is all in progress.
Yeah, we just had a work session with Warren, at least we had three of them there yesterday, and they were really focused on the nighttime operations and procedurally how we're going to do that, using new notifications and all that sort of thing. The Planning Commission work session is scheduled for the first Thursday in September, and the hearing is scheduled for the third Thursday. So it's coming up pretty quick. We've got the month of August to kind of get this out to the public and actually go back to the task force.
So are you looking for comments from us on this draft as it stands right now?
If you have
some. I know that there's at least one person on the board here that has experience in working with mining projects. So there's a couple of people here that want to take a review of this and we could provide comments. Sounds like we've got one, two, three, four.
Yeah.
So Dawn, Mike, Jamie, and Mike, do that. And we could do it through an email situation. That'd be great.
I'd like to just take a look at that one.
Yeah.
What's been, you know, condition on other projects.
Recognizing that this is just your first draft, but we'll
yeah, but it's pretty much what we're going forward with.
Okay.
I think generally speaking, it's much better and easier to deal with.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
From just a general comment, I think that it's much better, much easier to deal with. It doesn't duplicate state processes for estimation, which.
And there was some conflict with that, noise standards, and trying to get those adjusted through the county's process. Ray, could you send us out, or Rosie, send us out a reminder next week that sometimes we get busy and things.
I'm going to be out of time, so could the comments all funnel through you, Greg, so we can have an electronic copy of this, and then submit comments to you?
Yeah, do you
have... I will be out next week, but back the following Monday, so, yeah.
I will send out.
The reminder for everybody.
I'll be out for a couple weeks. Do you have another hearing or...
Do you want the presentation
for the planning commission work session? Well, first I'm going to go back to the task force, and they have to really work through the draft and standards, and I'll give the feedback on what the board is talking about.
When's your planning commission?
The 5th of September.
Oh, so we got time.
Yeah, if I can hear something by the first, that would be great.
Okay.
Could you pinpoint on that?
Sure.
Because I'm going
to be out. Michael, I'll follow up with you offline as well. I'm going to be out for a couple of weeks, but I'll send you some comments.
Okay, very good. And if they have additional comments once you get that back from the task force, when are you meeting with the task force? Probably in advance.
13th.
August.
Yeah.
I'm going to comment after I hear what they have to say. Does that make sense?
Well,
the task force has to say.
Well, I think we're to the point of wordsmithing.
Oh, okay.
So we're not.
If you like in general, just you don't have to say do you recommend this, but just you got some feedback on the general direction of it, that'd be great.
Okay.
And then I'll get you the draft that's going to go to the PC.
To Mike and the others.
Thank you, Mike. We have public comment on the agenda, but Ron handed me this before the meeting started, so I thought I'd better ask you if you wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, just briefly, I don't know if there's any public comment, but thanks. We just recently completed this low impact development tour guide in Clark County. Part of the intent to just get some dots on the map and show people there are some examples of low impact development practices. I'm really pleased with the way that it came out. It was funded by a grant by the Department of Ecology, and we did it in partnership with all the cities. So just want to give you guys copies. And we have a lot of these printed. We were able to print 5,000 copies of this grant, so we didn't have to just design it and print it on our own dime. But we have quite a few of them. They have the QR codes that are really cool. If you scan them, they can take you to the website and have videos like the McCord Toyota one's great. I mean, they've got a lot on their site with permeable papers where you learn how to stain and wash cars. And there's a website there as well that's making some of this stuff. So the website will continue to grow. But anyway, thanks for the 2 minutes.
Yep. Sure. That looks good. Okay, any public comments?
I've got one. I neglected this notice that was in the minutes just to report back on the board's work session on the GMA update. So attended that last month, or just a few weeks ago. Basically, it was just a really initial kickoff of what the process is going to involve. They took some preliminary look at OFM's numbers would be their predictions for, and it's sort of clear to me that those numbers are really low based on historical standards. And so as it sits right now, it doesn't just as a general sense, I don't think that there looks like there's going to be much in the way of urban growth area expansion that's going to go around unless those numbers do not change. So that's so just sort of the initial meeting and continue forward with that process and then it goes forward to the 2016.
So that was work on what's in the holding right now then?
That was sort of the indication from the board.
We would ask for Oliver to come and talk to us about that at some future meeting as well.
I heard rumors of contraction. Is there a discussion of that?
Yeah.
Is that possible or legal?
Yeah, it is. It's perfectly legal. So I take the holding off from the UGE. Yeah, but I personally, I find that really challenging just because, you know, the courts have already taken out so much land during the last go around. I think that when the county starts applying the vacant building lands model, which they haven't done to account for, you know, our beautiful stormwater regulations as well as all this other new stuff coming down, I think that with the population projection, it may end up washing out. So just something we'll have to
look at. You'll be able to get back some of the stuff we lost in the courts? Or is that
potentially.
Yeah.
I think there's indications, at least I have heard from cities like the center that are actively.
Yeah, they took a lot of jobs lined away with that.
That's true. And then the final plat process?
One quick thing. What's that?
The final plat process?
Yes, the final plat. Marty and I just scheduled that when we stepped out for a second. I apologize for having to step out for a second. But Tuesday, 8, 6, so next Tuesday, 3 to 5, if anyone's interested in being or participating in the final plat process, let me know. I mean, it'd be great to have someone from Olson.
I know. Yeah. And I've sent it out.
Yeah.
I've got surveyors. I've got Kurt. Jocelyn was it's probably the best job. I'm sure
she processed your final thoughts.
She's our final thought group.
Okay.
Yeah, she has the most experience with it.
So is there a plan to site plans in some?
Not on this particular meeting. We have 2 hours a lot. We're probably not getting into site plans.
There's a lot of similarities, right?
The final site plan and final thought, those are kind of, you know, akin to it on the process. And that is probably something else that needs a little work.
But the final thought process, I think, is significant.
Okay.
And there's more significance to it than there is to final site plan. Final site plan is more like just another step in the process, rather than final plat is like the final end.
So you'll be able to report back to us on that?
Yes. Marty and I have that on the agenda for the next meeting in September. Yeah. Dan, are you interested in that meeting? I brought you up because you used to process a lot of plats. You've got a lot of insight on that.
Sure.
Okay. I'll put you on the list, and you guys can decide who goes, but it does tie between, I know it's been moved to public works from engineering, but I think some of the challenges are those interactions between engineering and public works, or engineering and community development. Okay.
Thanks.
All right.
September 25th, just a heads up, I'll send out an official reminder too, we've got a forum on infrastructure, that's the RGF, BIA, and SWCA together, and so September 25th, the Resource Center, 3 to 5.
But
I'll
send out. So for the audio, we'll close the
meeting at 4:30. Yes. And next in September, this room is occupied. So we're still on the campus, but over at the elections building.
Okay. Yeah. Just across. Yeah. You guys.
Thanks. I forgot.
Thanks so much. That's a good put a lot together on
full of a travel
Yes.
Oh, that's whose presence I slowly
think about.
There was some meeting minutes from last just about
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so you're heading out next week also?
Yeah, actually, I'm not going to Scotland, but I'm going to Europe.
Oh, fantastic. Well, have a great time. Yeah.
So I won't be around for 7 and back on the email from the
country. So okay.
If something comes up, then
we'll keep this moving.
Yep.
Yeah, I think we've got a very cool agenda already set for September, so we're in good shape. Yeah, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
caucus.
Yeah.